Every time we look at Aston Villa, they're just signing a new extension or a new contract with Unai Emery.
I know. They just like to do this.
I genuinely thought that this was old news. The more times he does it, the better, John.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
OTB's The Hurling Pod.
With Bord Gáis Energy.
Hurling. It's anyone's game.
Welcome along. Slightly later than planned, it is the Hurling Pod for this week. There's been kind of illness going around. You can hear the chirping of birds, so it is an early morning Wednesday recording for us. And you'll notice that's not Paul Murphy over on the other side. It is, in fact, Podge Collins. Podge, how are you getting on?
Hey, Will. How's it going? Murph's off on another holiday.
James Kell, I like his start.
He's three games a dig. Start doesn't mean to go on.
Before I get to the intro, do you want to explain, Skell, why you have named a calf after this man so he can actually bask in the glory of this?
Yeah, I didn't do it for the crack now, Podge. It was just that, you know, the stars aligned. They were coincided with your appearance in the podcast when Clare played Kilkenny in the league final, and I happened to have a new berth on the farm. So I think it was applicable. And he's good, he's lively, he's well able to kick. So we named him Podge the Calf. And he's flying it.
That's all right. Good to hear.
And he's for sale, in case you know. if you want.
I'll come up and have a look, Skell.
I'm not sure exactly if that constitutes enough farming talk for this week or too much farming talk based on some of the comments in the last couple of pods. You actually got farming free last week because we ended up talking about all the hurling. So who knows? There might well be more mentions about Podge the Calf to come, and potentially more farming as well. But we are primarily here to talk about the two provincial finals which are coming up this weekend. Third successive year. We've got Limerick against Clare in the Munster Hurling Final on Sunday afternoon. The banner, Podge needs no reminding on this, on a streak of six losses in a row in Munster Finals. Goes back to 1998, losing the last couple against Limerick. Limerick are hoping to win six in a row in the province, which is a remarkable run for them, with the new Micmackie Cup in particular. If Dublin are to win their first Leinster title since 2013, they're going to have to do what hasn't happened a lot in the last 80 years, and that is a win against Kilkenny, just the one win in championship against Kilkenny in that period. But both teams, interestingly, coming into this final with pretty similar records off the back of what's been a pretty good summer for Dublin so far. And we've got the Joe McDonagh Cup final before that Leinster final as well, where Offaly go up against Laois on the back of winning their first ever All-Ireland Under-20 title at the weekend, which no doubt I'm going to be accused is the reason for the podcast going into midweek this week. But we'll get to all that. The Hurling Pod, of course, is brought to you by Bord Gáis Energy. They're the proud sponsors of the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship. True up the questions during the week, Podge said, look, there might be questions for Skell and I. Who knows? Maybe people want to talk about the 20s here. All about Podge. What's he think about Clare this coming weekend? So why don't we kick things off with the Munster final? Because Skell, Murphy and I were incredibly excited about the fact that this is Clare and Limerick coming back together again. We've had two really good provincial finals the last couple of years. And yet Clare as league champions faded in the last 10 or 15 minutes of the game against Limerick earlier this season. So what's your feeling ahead of Sunday?
Yeah, I suppose that's been a small bit of a feature, which is obviously worrying. Like anything that kind of consistently happens throughout a couple of games, I suppose maybe two or three years ago, Clare were accused of like their shooting percentage and missing chances and coming out of games at 50% shooting efficiency. And that was probably costing us games. And that would have been the feeling around the county. And at the moment, it's not seeing out games as strongly as we probably can and should. And I don't think it's a fitness thing. I'm not sure. It's very hard to put your finger on it. I know in the league final it was kind of similar. We let Kilkenny back into a game we shouldn't have. But even like that Limerick game, you take it, the first game of the championship, if Limerick come to town, All-Ireland champions, favourites to beat Clare and Ennis after about three or four very close games between Clare and Limerick. I think you were actually talking on the pod, the average like winning margin was like a point and a half or something by Limerick, even though they had gotten the right side of it. But like they only give up 30 odd scoring chances to Clare in a game that everyone felt Clare should have won easy. Like Clare just looked in so much control. And when you go through all the games that Clare play over the last two or three years, they average like 40 plus scoring chances. And like at Limerick are 45 and Clare an average of 40 this year. And you're just like wondering how, watching that game, Clare looked so in control. Did they only have 32 chances against Limerick to scoring opportunities, and Limerick seemed to rob us that day. Like I know Limerick fans might disagree, but just that was my feeling at the game. Like, you know, not without watching it back or anything, but that was the feeling at the game. And in the Munster final last year, it was a completely different story. Like Clare and Limerick, it was just end-to-end, really close game. Same with the Munster final the year before, that were 2022 that went extra time. So I suppose from a Clare perspective, you're just hoping that, one, our shooting percentage remains kind of similar to what it is. We're taking our chances. Two, we see out the whole game. Like, we have been using subs. It's not that. We have been using four or five subs a game. So you're just hoping that we see out the game strong and get on the right side of it, and we get our chances and take them. But I think it'll be interesting, like, and no more so than any game against Limerick, you might, if you win the turnover battle, you have a very good chance of winning that game. But they have to keep shooting efficiency high and get enough chances to beat Limerick, and that's and hopefully they will. And then you're just hoping we'll have everyone available for Sunday, and that's another thing. Like, and like, you look at Limerick this year, like, I'd say once with Flanagan gone now, they've throughout this Munster campaign, they've probably missed five key players. Mm-hmm. Between like Mike Casey been missing, Sean Finn been missing, Darragh Donovan been missing, Peter Casey been missing. I know Seamus Flanagan is potentially missing. I don't know if he is or not, but like, for them to absorb five key losses, like, if a club team lost them, they'd be absolutely lost in a league campaign at the moment. But they just seem to be able to absorb them, and they're still playing good stuff, and probably have had their most convincing Munster campaign with a blip against Cork, where they shot close to 80% as well. So it'll be a tough ask for Clare. Limerick will go in as half favourites, as they probably should, and I'm just hoping we've everyone available in Clare and tick those few boxes and finish the game strong. And, you know, I'll be happy as a Clare man if we do that, and hopefully we come out on the right side of a tight game.
Mm. Like, everyone, Podge, is trying to put their finger on the fade-outs that Clare have had this year. And I was just looking at the Irish Times yesterday, because No Plan B, had a piece up about it. And, like, you look at Cusack Park, on every meaningful metric, Clare are ahead of Limerick for the first 52 minutes. It's not just the scoreboard. It's 1:15-9 at that point. But they're edging possession. As you say, they've had 28 shots to 23. They're winning more puckouts. Their deliveries are going better. They've got 25 turnovers in that period. And you're just thinking, everything indicates towards Clare going to finish this game out. There's no reason to think there'd be any concern. And then Limerick just ramp it up in the 20 minutes between 53 and 73. Limerick win 3-6 to 3 points. They completely take over possession at that point. They get 10 turnovers during the period. Just miss the one puck out. Their deliveries into the forwards are perfect at that point. And they just get off so many shots. They get off 13 shots for that 3-6 during the period. It's kind of crazy. I don't know whether that's purely down to a Clare fade out, because we have had a bit of a pattern of it. Or do you give Limerick respect for the fact that there is genuinely another gear in them where they can step it up with 15-20 minutes to go?
I'd probably say Limerick are excellent at going in at halftime, reviewing the first half, seeing where things are going wrong, and addressing it. But they're also excellent at, during a game, like, regardless, middle of the second half, there is messages coming on if they see something that's wrong. Now, that particular game was the only game where you'd actually say Clare lost their shape, probably in the forward line. Any of the other games, looking at them, you couldn't say, like, they'd keep two men up top, they'd have their half forward line, like, everything would be kind of, I suppose, it's not as easy to analyse. But that Limerick game, we definitely lost our shape. There was one point where they'd like their three half backs were dropping back. We had two on one inside. I think Barry Nash bats it out. There's literally three or four Limerick lads to pick it up, and they break away and get a score. So in that Limerick game, we probably did lose our shape a bit, and I think they addressed it, and it didn't happen going forward. No, like, against Waterford, I felt the same. I felt a better team throughout the game, but just didn't see how it was comfortable as I would have liked. And same against Tipperary. In fairness, like, Tipperary put up a great fight, and Jake Moore sent forward was excellent. But against Limerick, they're gonna have to keep their shape. I'd say the other thing they're gonna have to do against Limerick is track the runners. Like, one thing Limerick are great at is, and Barry Nash is an expert at it, he gives the ball, and the instinct of the player is just to follow the ball with your eyes. And you just can't. You just got to keep an eye on who's giving that ball and track his run. You've got to trust that a player is coming in to take, let's say if it's Hannon. If Barry Nash is popping the ball to Hannon and going, you've got to trust the centre forward to take Hannon. Like, fair enough, if the ball has been thrown around the opposite side, the half forward line where Keane Lynch is popping to Tom Morrissey and you're swarming and you know you've loads of bodies. But as soon as you get that overlap in that Limerick half back line, you're in trouble straight away. So that's one thing I'd be looking at that I hope, like, Clare historically have been good at it, but Limerick against other teams get a lot of joy at it. So it's one thing I'm kind of looking out for on Sunday.
Mm. Skell, you love to watch patterns and to work things out. Have you been able to put your finger on these Clare fade-outs that we've seen, probably going back to maybe the league final anyway, a little bit in the league semi-final maybe, although the job was done early against Tipperary. We have seen a bit of a trend. Have you been able to put your finger on why it's happening?
I just think, to be honest, I have to talk about Limerick first, because normally it happens, you know, between Clare and Limerick, you could say, but Clare, they throw everything at Limerick from the very beginning, from the outset. And they always, usually more often than not, get themselves into a really prominent position heading into the last quarter. Limerick didn't can have, they can introduce players that make an impact off the bench. So I think when we talk about Limerick, we talk about the first 15. And even though, Pod, you mentioned the five injuries at various stages throughout the year. But they're bringing in guys who are making a considerable difference. So I think we, all the focus on youth in Limerick is really on Cathal O'Neill at the moment, and probably rightfully so. But we're not giving enough, you know, I suppose, kudos to the likes of Adam English and Conor Boylan who come in and keep carrying the fight, let's say. And then you have to, that coincides with what I agree with you, Podge. There was a real structural change, and it wasn't on behalf of Limerick, lads, it was behalf of Clare. They'd Clare changed their, I wouldn't call it their system. I don't think it was an allowance for Tony Kelly either. I just believe that their half-forward line, which is the key line, dropped out. They just dropped out too far. They couldn't get on the brakes for opposition puck out. Like, Limerick couldn't buy a puck out in the first half because the Clare half-forwards were doing so well. The likes of Duggan and Dave Fitzgerald mopped up everything. They were really good. And, you know, being in the gantry, you could see where their start positions were, that they were expecting long hookouts, and then they were right there on arrival. So they were getting, I always use the word, numerical advantage in the middle of the field. That all stopped in the last, I'd say, 15 minutes, you could say. And then what happened was, then, like Podge says, Sean Finn became a spare man for reasons unbeknownst to us all, and he just starts coming out of the ball, and these runners start moving. So if you're allowing the Limerick defence to come out and run at you with, in all different angles, you're kind of in a spot of bother there. And that's just what happened repetitively. They had numbers at the back, they broke it, they came out of it, and then they were exiting where there was three or four Clare forwards versus five or six Limerick backs, and then they worked the ball up the pitch, which is like the Limerick style. They loved that. That's why anytime I see Limerick playing, I'm always saying, push right up on top of them. Go up right up on top of them, go man-to-man, and make them beat you that way. Because what they're excellent at is running around you. That's the truth. Run around you. You want to make them poke the ball as long as you can and get some sort of, you know, I suppose, time advantage for your defence up top, because when they're coming at you in numbers, they're an extremely strong animal to stop. But I don't think, if I'm from a Clare perspective the next day, right, there's a few things I'm looking at. I'm saying, right, Clare will always come up for the battle, which they always do, against Limerick specifically. They'll always have the ability to match them in terms of, you know, the intensity for the first few minutes. And they'll never be kind of away from touching distance from Limerick at half time. So I wonder what the dressing room is like, truthfully speaking, because I can imagine what the Limerick dressing room is like. There's no, you know, it's not all bravado, roaring, shouting. I would imagine the Limerick dressing room is very methodical. It's very, you know, focused on what are we doing next. Not we have to go harder, go faster. That's just kind of shit talk, really. You know, but I imagine it's very, very tactic focused. And this is the way we're going to adjust our game plan. This is what Clare are doing. This is how we counteract it, and so on. So it's like the Limerick players come out of the dressing room at halftime kind of informed. You know what I'm saying? If you go back to the COVID times, lads, remember there was a break at halfway through the halves. They used to come out in the second quarter and the fourth quarter much better than they did in the first and the third. Because it's like they were...
The key to their success, scale was the Kinnerk whiteboard. That was actually... that went away, Limerick were going to go away, I heard.
Well, one of the keys, like, in fairness, I have to say... And, you know, even from an opposition player, I was like, what the hell is he saying? Do you know what I mean? Because he had the whiteboard out and, you know, it was evidence. He was showing, he was informing them, and they come out informed, and they used to blow teams off in the third quarter specifically. The second and fourth forward in the dressing rooms, you could say, for the games nowadays. And I just wonder, is that the same thing that's happening in Clare? And part of me is thinking, I'm not so sure. You know what I mean? So I think they just need to assess what's in front of them in the first half, really become informed at halftime, and then carry the fight again. I don't think they drop off, lads, to be honest. I have a problem, Podge, right, with Clare's concession of goals, Clare's concession overall. I think that's a concern. Because Limerick have conceded 96 points, let's say. So what's that in four games? It's 24 points average. Do you know what I mean? So they're hard to break down, you know. Whereas Clare, I just think they have potential to leak a goal. So if Clare are going to win, I think the key person for me, and personally, is John Conlon. And everyone look at the cornerbacks and halfbacks and forwards. But John Connellan, if he's able to kind of set up a role in the six there that stops Limerick from getting goals, which is very easy for me to say, very hard for him to do, right? I think that's going to be huge, because look at, like, you can't be conceding three goals in Limerick, because if they're getting off 50 shots, as you said yourself, with like 60 or 70% ratio, and you concede two or three goals, you're done. You're just done. Like, you can't get back at them. So we can talk about all the, you know, personnel matchups, which is great, and, you know, different external factors. But I think if John Connellan sets up really well and offers protection to the full back line, you know, and Clare keep man to man as best possible up top, there's a great chance.
Podge, tell us this. What does Connacht tell you on the whiteboard? I don't know if it was a whiteboard he would have used with G, but I presume he would have had something similar.
Well, he's just analysing what's going on, where the other team's getting joy, where they're setting up, where he wants to move players, where he wants players to do a certain job and what kind of job that is. Like, there's no rocket science, like, in it. He's just excellent at analysing the game in the game. He's brilliant. And in fairness to the Clare management, it's the same. It's the same theory, like, when they're running at half-time, like, they're analysing Limerick throughout the first half. They have a team involved and they're trying to get it right. But just down to Skehill's point there, and it's really interesting. It was really interesting in the 20s game as well. If John Conlon drops off, whoever it is, like last year in the Munster final, David Reedy probably got a bit of joy. Like, if John Conlon drops off, someone has to do a job on his man. And the problem with Limerick is that they move the ball so well through the hands in, like, let's say from the opposition 65 back towards their own goals, that when they have an extra man or an overlap, they'll destroy you. If their half back line, if they're shooting first of all, like Burns, if he's left wing side, it's probably a score. Kyle Hayes is probably player of the year at the moment. He's contender anyway, he's just excellent. It seems to be teams are just avoiding him. So they need to be watched at all times. So it's just how you manage. And like with Offaly, it was just so excellent how they managed the drop off. Like, they always got the player back, but they nearly had someone covering back on his man. And they were just filtering back straight away after the puck out. They're three in the full forward, and next thing, corner forward, centre forward, like Dan Burke's out the field, and their half back line are picking up the breaks. They have an overload, then they're working the ball, and then they're able to hit this lovely ball and avoid the tip sweeper. Because as soon as you're standing 70 yards from goal, it doesn't matter who's standing back there. The only thing, I suppose, that it does affect, and I scale on to your point, is that if a corner forward turns corner back, you've covered. That's what you're probably preventing, because any intercounty player or player at that, like that 27, they're going to pick a pass from that distance, especially if they're uncontested because you have an extra man. So, like, it is a difficult one for John, and it has to be managed, like, very well, because, like you said, Clare push up well on Limerick, like, when they go man to man, but we're not winning the games is the problem. The big games were coming out the wrong side of it. So it's a tough one.
Like, John has to, like, I suppose when I say John drop off, that could probably get slightly confused with placing him as a sweeper. I wouldn't really classify that as a sweeper. What you'd be looking for John to do is a tricky job now, Podge, right? Is he has to push up when we're on attack, and he has to get backed in, you know, kind of like 5 or 6 yards ahead of his man. And I know this sounds kind of radical, but you'd nearly be looking at the opposition and go, right, who is the best lad to leave semi-isolated? And you'd have to say, it's Will O'Donoghue. That's reality. Like, you have to mark everybody else, because everyone else is a huge shooter. So I don't know how Clare get that balance, Podge. He did it to us before. I thought, I hadn't seen it before, where I think he positioned Tony Kelly at 11, if I'm right. And go back to like 2018, Podge, now this time. And then in our puck out, then he would drop off to midfield. Then somebody else who was in midfield would drop off to a six. And next thing, he created a man, you know, at the back for use. But it didn't really give us much up front, if that makes sense, because it was a real structural change. It wasn't as simple as bringing the corner forward back to a sweeper, like, you know, historically. You moved 3 or 4 pieces, which then you were doing that in real time as well. Which I thought was the first time I'd seen that. So part of me is thinking, is that something that's going to be semi-adopted the next day, whereby you transfer everyone back on, let's say, the Limerick possession, and then move them up again? Which sounds, again, theoretically, it sounds perfect. But to do it in practice against Limerick, who most likely will have this analysed, as you said, Podge, within 10 minutes, less. So they'll probably put something in to counter it. So it's grand making plans, you know, and I think most teams, they go in with a plan A and they put all their weight on plan A. And then plan B is like, oh, it's chancy. So Limerick make you do a plan B. That's the trouble. And they make you do a plan C because they have your plan A countered. And that's reality. And that's why teams, I sometimes find it very hard to they try to adopt their plan B or plan C in game, and they can't. It's just they can't because Limerick are too good. Yeah. Fuck it, Podge. We're in trouble.
Thanks for making the rest of the year entirely redundant, Skell, where you're like, well, Limerick are just so good. I mean, who's going to be able to beat them? Essentially, well, what you just said there.
Well, to a degree, but sure, like, history is a habit to repeat itself. I mean, to be honest, if I made that statement now, wouldn't I have plenty of evidence to go back on? You know, The last 3 or 4 years have been truly awesome by Limerick. That's the truth, like, you know. And in fairness to Clare, like, they're the, by far and away the team that have come closest to Limerick over the last number of years. Like, I was saying to you, Paul, you mentioned about the points difference, like, and there's a single score, you know, in the last 5 outings between Limerick and Clare. So, again, you would say history is a habit to repeat itself. So it's going to come down to it. So, like, Clare have to stay in the fight, which we know the Munster finals, they perform better in the Munster finals than they have in the round robins to a degree at stages. So, but again, I have to jump. I have to ask Paul, just in my head, Tony Kelly, his situation, if he's fit, what do you do? Because we've been asked about this and we're all saying you have to play him, but where are you at?
Yeah, I completely agree. The tricky one, like, is what player loses out, because it is a difficult one. Like, a lot of the forwards are playing well. Like, even Dave Fitzgerald's averaging 4 points a game from wing forward, let's say, and I know he's undroppable, but like, no one's talking about him in the championship compared, like, the league. He was player of the league, and then he's averaging 4 points a play from wing forward, and he's nearly going under the radar. David Reid, he's been very effective. Like, I think he's a key player for Clare. Peter Duggan's having an excellent year. Like, I think it's the best year for the last 3 or 4 years. Mark Rogers, undroppable. Shane O'Donnell's form of his life. Ed McCarthy's excellent. He's very consistent on the freeze. Like, Dara's work rate around the middle when you're looking at, like, the likes of Will O'Donoghue and, like, a Cathal O'Neill. Like, are you going to put Dara on Cathal O'Neill? Do you know, Cathal Malone matches up well with, like, Will O'Donoghue there. It's a real physical battle anytime two of them come up against each other. But listen, as far as I'm concerned, Tony, Shane Rollins playing out of his skin, as, like, you've mentioned several times, no doubt about it. So, but, like, you have to play Tony, I think, if he's fit, if he's match fit. And they'll have had training matches. And even though I was thinking about this, like, with regards to Limerick, like, is Sean Finn fit? Is he going to be back? Like, because I do feel like they're 3 full in the full back line. Mike Casey, Dan Morris and Barry Nash are excellent. But, like, if anything happened to Mike Casey or Barry Nash, like, they'll want Sean Finn available. Is Seamus Flanagan out? Like, do we know that? I don't know. Does Shane O'Brien start? Like, you know, I know they like O'Dolig as a finisher. Like, how does that go? Is it Glenn O'Brien inside? There's a lot of, like, unknowns about Sunday. Like, Dave McInerney, is Dave McInerney fit for Clare? I don't know. He's, like, he matches up very well with Hegarty. They've had some great battles. They're really enjoyable to watch because it's really kind of old school 50-50, nearly two of them go at it, and it's an enjoyable spectacle. But yeah, I think you play Tony. He's too good. He's just, like, as far as I'm concerned, your name in the top. If you list the top 5 hurlers in the country, if anyone sat down to it, he'd be in everyone's.
Who are you drafting? You didn't tell us.
I don't know. That's up to management.
Get off the fence. Get off the fence.
That's off the management. I'll let them manage that problem. But, like, whoever they drop, whether it is Dara, like, really, like, I'd be very unlucky. Whether it's Dara, Malone, really, whoever they do drop, if they drop one of them, if they do, like, they're going to need that player in the game. Like, so whoever it is, like, you probably start Tony. And then whoever the other
player. Would you have him in midfield, Podge, or would you have him in corner forward?
I wouldn't mind him in midfield, like, at all. I think that Shane O'Donnell, what happened, like, I feel like if you play a Tony inside with Shane, let's say, and then you have, like, Shane O'Donnell has been such a target man that players are naturally just over the last few games, they're going to be picking him out with their passes, and they kind of, like, I'm just speaking from my own experience with the club. Like, you play with certain players for so long, and you're so used to looking up and finding them. You nearly feel sorry for the other corner forward sometimes because you're so used to picking them out because you know their movement and everything like that. So I just feel like there's only a few opportunities in a game, and not probably not enough where you have the a player out the field is the head up and is looking into the full forward line. I think if you've got Shane, Aiden, and Tony in there, that you're not going to get enough ball to all of them. It just doesn't happen. So for that reason, I'd probably play Tony out the field. And like, Tony's just so gifted that like he'll be able to find Shane and Aiden inside. I just do think like, midfield would be a fine position for him. But yeah, I'm playing Tony if he's match fit. And they'll see that in training. And like I always say that about like management, because I know like the Clare management, Limerick management, whatever management it is, like over the years, even with the football the last few years, and when I was playing with Clare, you'd often hear lads and it's real pub talk. It's like, how is this lad playing? Or how is that lad playing? Or he's not good enough, or he's not up to it. And you're listening to it and you're just thinking in your own head, like you've got a manager, you've got three selectors maybe, you've probably got one or two coaches, and then you've got everyone else around the setup that's helping. And they're training every night, and there's different drills, and there's matches, and there's metrics that they're measuring, and they're going over the matches, and they're analysing it way more than anyone else is. And they're picking the team. So they will pick the team accordingly. They will pick the team that gives us the best chance of winning on Sunday. And if they feel that throughout training the last few weeks, because of Tony's injuries, that we're going to use Tony as an impact sub, they'll know best. And if I'm picking the team, Tony's perfectly fit and he's healthy. Tony's playing, but I'm not picking the team, and that will be their decision. But like, that's why I find it so hard to criticize management teams when you just hear a narrative after a game. How isn't this lad playing, or how isn't that lad playing? And I always just think like, you're not in the field three nights a week, midweek at the weekend, watching everyone, seeing who matches up well in a certain type of player, seeing what way you want to set up. So it's the two ones in Clare, Dave Mack and Tony Kelly. What's going to happen there? That's they're the two kind of talking points, I suppose, from a team selection point of view.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a hurling pod without me bringing you off onto a tangent here. But you never find at any point someone who trains remarkably well and maybe doesn't quite do it in matches, or someone who might be excellent in matches but maybe doesn't meet the metrics in training.
No, I don't. I, to be honest, not really. I couldn't say I did. Maybe more so when I was involved in the football, there was one or two lads that you're just kind of waiting, but they're younger and you're just waiting for them to explode or to have their breakout game. But no, in hurling, I'd have to say, if you were performing in training, you were getting your chance. And more often than not, there was always kind of like, if you're doing it in training and if you're marking Conor Cleary or whoever it was, and there was a good few lads there that it was tough mark and you're doing it on them, you're usually kind of ready to get through to make the team. So there's none that stand out anyway. But
Skell, I bet there are for you some poor trainers who are good players.
Oh God, this is where I have to use my own advice and get off the fence. No matter what you're going to do, you're going to offend someone. But I'm kind of in the same court as Podger. No one immediately stands out at me. You'd have lads that would be extremely quiet. I wouldn't say that they'd perform a training, but they'd be extremely quiet and reserved. The next thing, when they come into a game, they turn into a bit of an animal. Do you know that kind of way? Which is probably the best correlation I can draw. And someone I can think of that comes to mind straight away is Dahi Burke, who would be a very quiet-natured individual naturally. Wouldn't say much in training. Would go about his business, fair enough, but then he turns into a bear when he's playing the game competitively. So, but I can't see. I that's against my belief, to be honest with you. I don't see how that ever happens for a player, how you can just basically magically flick a switch and turn it on in games. That doesn't work for me. I always think you train to play. You know what I mean? So I think what you have to produce in training, what you want to produce in a game, I can't see it working for... Like, maybe there is. Maybe someone will correct me now, who they can say a player, doubtful mind you, who just trains shit, doesn't do much, he plays bad in training, but then turns into a magic player on the team for the day of a game. Unlikely. Unlikely.
Yeah. I think back in the old days, this appeared to be, you know, mercurial figures who would turn up and you'd barely see them all week of training, yet on a Sunday afternoon, they'd be absolutely perfect. Maybe, but just the way things have gone in modern hurling, you cannot afford any more to be that person. Dermot Williams is a Clare fan, Podge, and he has asked us, does Podge think that Clare will have to do something different tactically for Sunday? any ideas on what options they may have. So anything, any surprise that Clare could potentially spring here to try and catch Limerick out?
I don't think so. I'd be more interested in how Limerick's set up. Like, that's probably the big thing. If I'm in the Clare camp, that's probably what I'm thinking about. I'm thinking they don't really have their usual setup with, if, now I'm assuming Seamus Flanagan did his hamstring. And if he did, he's out. So he's a big loss. And Shane O'Brien, I had him in Mary Eye, the Bull. He's an excellent fella. He's an excellent player to win his own ball. He's an excellent man to take his own score. He doesn't care if it's along the ground, if it's drilled to hand, if it's over his head. He can take ball anyway. And he is like, he reminds me of Aaron Gillan. Now, Aaron Gillan's, you know, last 10 years, Aaron Gillan's player of the year, or player of the decade, in my opinion. He's just been unbelievable. So comparing to him is probably a bit unfair. But he's that kind of a player. He's like, if Aaron Gillan's injured, we could throw in Shane O'Brien. But Shane Flanagan injured, throwing in O'Brien, it's a different dynamic. You've two players you can target really anyway with the ball, like, and they're going to be good. But then who's going to be corner forward? Who's going to be the other corner forward? Like, is it David Reedy? Is it Keane Lynch going out? Like, you're going to have Tom and Grod Hegarty on the wings. Midfield, is Colin O'Neill going to stay midfield with Will O'Donoghue? Like, that's what I'd be interested in. The backs kind of pick themselves, assuming Sean Finn's not back, and if he is back, then the manager have a headache. That, like, irrelevant. Like, I think one of them comes in and, like, they're nearly as strong as each other, that full back line. But that's what I'd be thinking about. I'd be thinking about David Reedy or Keane Lynch are going to be corner forward probably. And how are we going to deal with them drifting out the field, creating space? How are we going to manage that?
You can take that one up, Scale. I would think that Colin Neal would have naturally, maybe a year or two, would have been picked a corner forward, but he's playing so well out the field, we were talking about last week. I presume you keep him out there for now.
Yeah,
just before you answer, is Darragh Donovan back?
See, we keep hearing that he's back training, and we keep hearing that he's close to coming back, but the fact we haven't seen him yet would make me think it's a big ask to step him straight into a game of this intensity without having game time behind him. I don't know, Podge, what do you do?
That's just getting you on, but just to add him into the mix.
Yeah.
Put the pin in the grenade, Podge, and throw it over here to me. I'll answer the Darragh Donovan one there straight off, because he's missed a lot of time, to be fair. And I don't think if he's available, you put him straight in. I don't classify him in the same bracket. No disrespect now as kind of the Tony Kelly, because Tony Kelly has, we know, been back for the last number of weeks, and has been just slowly getting reintegrated into the speed of things, right? But again, with the knowledge we have at hand, I haven't heard anything about Darragh Donovan getting back into things, you know, only very recently. I'm talking about like a week or 10 days. So that to me seems like it's a very tricky proposition for that man to go into a Munster final straight off, having not hurdled, even for himself mentally, having not hurdled for a while, to get up to that pace against players who, you know, they're match sharpened. It's as simple as that. So I can't see him being, you know, starting. Then to the Conor O'Neill one, I'm always in favour of keeping players in positions where they're making hay. Simple as that. So, like, if Conor O'Neill is playing well around the middle, whether that be a forward line midfielder, even at wing back to a degree, in that area, the middle third, as I like to call it, I don't move him at all. I leave him exactly where he is and tell him, you just keep doing what you're doing, kid, because what he's doing is getting on the ball at 60, 70 yards out, breaking a tackle and shooting. And it's, yes, his efficiency is not 100%, but he's still coming away with 4 or 5 points to a degree to a game. So he's extremely effective in that area, and he takes watching. So if you're setting up against Limerick, normally you'd say, all right, we need to watch runs from Hayes, we have to watch Lynch, etc. Now Conor O'Neill has been added into that bracket, which is credit to him, because he's able to, we asked the question, was he going to be able to make his own stamp on the Limerick team? And I think, look, it's coincided with some injuries, obviously, but he's firmly put his stamp on the team. And even if they have a full complement to pick from, I think somebody else drops out. He's still playing. He's playing that well. You know what I mean? So credit to that kid. But like the first, you're right, Podge, because if you go off the last 4 games Limerick have played, right, the people they've had on the pitch have been different all the time because of injuries and whatnot. So like it's like Kyle and Knork have a 20-man list, right? It's like, what have we available today, right? And they look at what they've available, and it's like this scheme, a slight variance of a game plan that they always do. That, all right, this is what we're going to go with because we have X, Y, Z out, right? So now the questions you're asking about player availability, that's probably going to dictate their again, their selection, obviously, to a degree, but a slight little tinkering of how they're going to play. And I think, obviously, Lohan and his management team, I would anyway, I'd be trying to find out what the situation is to a degree. But I'd say the first few minutes, you know, the warm-up, etc., you're watching, obviously, you're watching your own team to a degree, but other people have done that, but you're watching Limerick and saying, right, who have they picked, what way they're setting up, etc. And you're trying to make an informed decision straight away before throw in and get a message in, which is hard. Messages getting in real time is hard nowadays. Limerick have it down to a T with the doctor. He's the one giving the messages. Like, and I think everyone knows this now, don't they? The cat's out of the bag with that.
I think people have probably picked up.
You haven't answered. You haven't answered. How will they get away with the dibbles? why do we think of that? But the game itself, you see, I sometimes, Pod, I'm looking at Limerick and say, right, you can try second, I won't say second guess them, you can try guess what way they're going to set up, right? But they do change personnel and system so often in game, you know what I mean, that it's hard to get a read on what, it's hard to get a true read of them prior to the game. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So you're looking at them going, right, we definitely have their team down to a T here now. We have their patterns down to a T, we have their system, now we can attack it. Then you get in game and they change it a quarter of the way through. And the trouble is, they change it, right? And you're thinking in real time, something's going on here. And before you know it, there's 10 minutes gone and they score 2-4 in you. That's happened numerous times where they've got a run on teams. And every journalist in the country goes, isn't it great how Limerick get a run in this time and this time? But really what they don't see is systematic changes. And next thing you just, they fly through you. Because they're, as I was saying last week, Will, the three ways to get through a team is over them, through them, or around them. So normally most teams are really good at one, maybe two of those systems, you know what I mean? But Limerick are really good at three of them. So like, for example, Dublin are really good at going through you. Do you know what I mean? And around you. So they're really good at probably 2 degree two, but they're not good in the third one, whereas Limerick seem to have it down really, really fine to a T on the three. So they're terribly hard. When you close one door, the devil's open up another one. And that's just what we're dealing with, Les. You know, I know we're talking about this for the last 4 or 5 years at this stage, how good they are. You know, and we've all been on the back end of a beating with them, so just have to accept it to a degree.
Three things that I'd be kind of looking out for is just, can we condense our backs the way, let's say, if you look at that Galway Limerick Ireland semi-final in the second half, the way Limerick just dropped their midfielder into their half-back line, completely condensed on the Galway puck out, and Galway couldn't win a puck out. Like, I'd like Clare to condense our back line. And like, I think Offaly in the 20s were excellent at that as well. So condense that. That's what I'd like to see. And then the other thing, tracking the runners, of like not having that overlap. Like, there are two things that they require a lot of work rate. You know, there are just two things, I suppose, nearly from a defensive thinking, very defensive minded here now, but there are two things that I'd like to see clear. I'd like to see them win the battle of the field, tighten up our half-back line, not give Limerick the space they're used to. And then on the other side, make sure you're tracking the runners. So I think that would put us a long way towards getting a result.
Just before that's we talk about the... It will.
Yeah.
That's good, because
it's easy to say it, though.
Even go back to the comments. So if you condense your backs, right? What Limerick, when Limerick condense their own backs, they're inviting you to run at them. So they said to Galway last year, right? If you want to run at us, run at us. So, and Galway, we weren't able to run at them. We didn't have the legs nor the system management, as far as I'm concerned, to run at them. So if Clare condense their backs now, you're inviting Limerick to run at you. Which I would class your backs being condensed, do it in real time, not in play, if you know what I mean, as opposed to dead. If you do it in dead time, let's say, where the ball's out of play, whether it be a puck out or whatnot, they will run right through you. That's the trouble. Right? You have to do it, you have to kind of transfer it in and out through the game, which is very, I said it, it's very simple for me to say this. Very, very simple. But it's extremely difficult to do it. And you have to be really fucking telepathic with your teammates of which way you're going to play. You know what I mean? Which is, again, sounds like pie in the sky stuff, but it can be done, like. It can be done. And you have to get the Limerick backs going back the way. You know what I mean? So yeah. Cork style, you know, Cork's, I won't say style, you know the game plan they adopted with the long ball and just everyone throw at it, right? That's you're hoping for, you know, a result there. Get me? You're hoping if the ball goes down high, let's say we get onto a break, let's hope we get it. Whereas I wouldn't like to see Clare do that now, live in the kind of the hope bracket. I'd like to see Clare pick up the ball from their backs, which they're well able to do, and run through them. And then get to O'Donnell. Because O'Donnell will pin back teams. He's so good. If you put him at 14, he'll pin back a Declan Hannan, or he'll keep a Barry Nash within reason, or a Sean Finn. So the opportunity will arise in the middle for me.
Yeah, and the great thing about him and Rodgers in particular is that when they do get the ball in their hand, the swarm tackle, they're excellent in the swarm tackle. like Limerick will come to you in twos and threes. And the most important thing is that a clear isn't standing idle. That they all know if Shane or Alan wins the ball, or if Roger wins the ball, or Aidan wins the ball, or whoever it is, that they're going to get swarmed by two or three, and we should have two or three free men. And it's not as simple as just firing it out. But clear players have to realise we're involved in the play at all times. We're an option. They've dropped their two midfielders back in the tackle, half our line back. Our wing backs are now in play. Like, we have to be an option on the outside. So that's another element of trying to break down Limerick, I suppose.
Just before we go to the Leinster final, Podge, want to ask you, Banner Rising. So we've gone from Skehill's Devils to Banner Rising's Villains here. He says, does Podge think Clare's bench is strong enough to make impact against the Villains on Sunday?
Yeah, definitely. I think Ian Galvin is, like, any time he gets on the field, he's just so accurate. He's able to pick up ball. I know Ian would love to be starting, but he's kind of made his name now as a bit of an impact sub this year, and I think he's been very effective. If you're starting Tony, you're going to have maybe, let's say, a Reedy or a Daryl Owen or coming in, and like they'll bring massive energy and massive work rate. Like, I do think Clare's bench, they have plenty options and play for plenty positions, and I think they have a balanced bench. And I definitely wouldn't put down, let's say, the lag at the end of the games, or the lack of scores at the end of the games, down to our bench coming in, because I do think we've got some excellent subs. So I think we've, in fairness to Brian and their management team, I think in the league and throughout championship, they've developed a panel, and we've options in different positions we mightn't have had in previous years. So I'd be comfortable enough with our bench.
All right, Skell. Leinster final then. We remember Dublin against Kilkenny 3 years ago, back in 2021. Where there were COVID cases on the day of the game, and it never quite happened for Dublin to build on the Galway win, and it was a 9-point win for Kilkenny in the end. You have to go back to 2013 for that Dublin win against Kilkenny in Championship, which was the replay, and Dublin go on to win the Championship in that year. Outside of that, obviously, it's been complete and utter Kilkenny dominance in recent seasons as well. They're going for 5 in a row in the Leinster Championship as well. But I'm just wondering, and I know we were asking Murph the week before last about his kind of initial feeling about whether he'd be concerned about Dublin. This year, Parnell Park, if we take all the evidence of that game, Dublin were able to go toe-to-toe with Kilkenny. Can they do the same on Saturday night in Croke Park?
I think they can. And I think if you were to ask Kilkenny people to answer you genuinely, honestly, are you worried about Dublin? They'd all say no. That's just the reality of it. Because I asked Murph about it last week, or the week previous, what was it? Feels like yesterday.
About, yeah, it was 2 weeks ago.
The amount of times that Dublin have beaten Kilkenny in Championship, and I think he came up with like once in 24 years, 25 years. So the level of concern, I'd imagine, that the Kilkenny hurling folk, right, who are very proud and, you know, understand how good they are to a degree, the level of concern they have for Dublin, I think, is low enough. However, from my perspective, and having watched them up close, Dublin this season now, right, and we're going back to the three methods of system for getting through teams, if you know what I mean. Pro Park, for me, suits Dublin better than Parnell Park. And I know we've had debates over pitch dimensions and, you know, all that jazz, but Croke Park is an expansive field. Fields are more expensive than Parnell Park. And
you're going against all conventional wisdom here, because the belief seems to be Dublin are actually much harder to play in Parnell Park.
And I was one of those people. I was one of those people up to about, let's say, last year, where I thought Dublin were suited in Parnell Park because they were harnessing support and tight parameters and not getting exposed to the back. But it seems like that Micheál and the management team have kind of thrown away that shackle off them and say, right, we're going to play our own system, which is evident. We've seen it in the last two rounds, to be fair. And they're adopting a really energetic running game. So the support is one thing, yeah. And your tight pitch, I think myself, it probably doesn't play to their strengths as much as what they have at present, you know. So if you go to Croke Park at the moment, again, I go back to the expansive field. Likely won't be a capacity crowd, as you can imagine. And they can run the ball, you know, and they have the thing. It's very similar to Offaly at the weekend. Whenever Tipperary had the ball, you know, Offaly just always seemed to have the pace to get there. You know, whether if Tipperary tried to run through Offaly, or even if they put the ball in over the halfback, and the pace was always there. Whether it be, you know, anyone, Kelly, Bourke, Guinan, all these lads had the pace to make up the ground. You know, whereas I feel like Dublin at the moment have something quite similar. So if they get If Kilkenny try to draw them out, and, you know, the ball goes in over the top, it's like Dublin have a really good reset pace. They've great pace going forward, which we saw against Galway in abundance, you know, and they really expose Galway to a degree. So I'm not going to say Kilkenny are slow. They're not that at all. But I just think the way the matchup and the way Dublin has kind of evolved truthfully speaking, in the last 12 months, and to their credit, in fairness to them, and the way they've evolved has now put themselves in a much better position to take on Kilkenny and Leinster final this year than I would say last year, the year previous. So I don't think it's going to be a hammering to a degree. I think it's going to be closer than people think, really and truly, because again, there's something different about, obviously, Litchie Hogan comes to an off the ball a few weeks ago about, you know, the showing up for a Leinster final as opposed to a round robin game. And I'm saying maybe that the Dublin, there's something in that. Maybe the Dublin, they've got themselves here on merit, truthfully speaking, and they're in a Leinster final now finals to go for winning. So you might see a different Dublin in terms of the performance elevation. They might go another tier above than what they produced against Galway. And then again, Kilkenny might do the same because, look, their record in Leinster finals in recent years has been excellent. The last year, they shouldn't have won the fucking thing, but it's just, it is what it is, right? No points crying over spilt milk, my friends. But what I'm saying, to summarise, Les, I'm expecting a really competitive performance from Dublin. High energy, high pace game to kind of, you know, continue on the way they've been playing of late.
What's your assessment of Dublin been this year so far, Pod?
Yeah, like, I suppose they've got a game plan. They've got a system that's working for them. Like, going down to Salt Hill, it's a place that no like county team wants to go.
It's not even Galway, but it sounds like it's Gael last week. But anyway.
Yeah.
It's misery,
but like, it's a tough away day. So for Dublin to go down there, and even before the red card, let's say, they just seemed to, like, there was a gale blowing against them. And they just seemed, because of their runners, to be able to stand and strike. Like, I was at home watching it, and I was with my brother, and I was saying, the wind mustn't be that strong. But then Galway come up in the second half, and are shooting off the back foot from closer distances, or with a bit of pressure, and it's dropping short. And you just get an idea then of the Dublin system like that. They're able to work that free man, and they were doing this before the red card. Like, so they're getting into space because of getting an overlap and then standing and striking in a good area of the field, and you get way more distance standing and striking. So they have a good system. And then, like, you just think from a Kilkenny's perspective, Kilkenny will try to analyse Dublin, and they'll look at how we're going to deal with these runners, what way are we going to set up, and they'll probably go man to man. They'll probably be like, we're going to have to push up. We're going to have to avoid, like, you're going to have to track your man. Like I said about nearly the Limerick thing, you're not going to have to keep your eyes off the ball nearly. Keep your eye on the man. Let the fella behind you deal with the fella behind you, like the fella he's marking, and work it up from there. So I'd say you'll see real man-on-man combat stuff on Sunday from, like, both teams. But I've been very impressed with Dublin. And when you're playing to a system that's working, the players, like, get great confidence in it, and they get great confidence in their management, and it kind of develops this kind of rapport throughout the year of, like, a strengthening and a unity of a group. And that's something that is so hard to build. It's so hard, like, you can't manufacture it. Like, it just happens organically. And when you're lucky enough to be involved in a team where it's happening, you can nearly feel it. You don't want to talk about it, but they'll have a great bond after the campaign they're after having. And especially, like, with the way they came back against Wexford and finished that game, like, you're, like, what, 6 points down, went into injury time and end up drawing that game. And teams would look at that and be like, geez, they were 6 points down. Like, where are Dublin going to be this year? And the way they finished this month, this Leinster campaign, they're going really well. And then, like, on the Kilkenny side, but will Kilkenny have everyone available? Like, that's kind of the team selection's always the one with Kilkenny. And that's where I was kind of going through yesterday in my head. Like, Kilkenny, when they have everyone, they're kind of nearly a different animal. You kind of have to think about it differently there. So I don't know what their availability is like. Do they have everyone back?
So John Donnelly has a thumb injury, and we know how good he played in the game against Dublin back in the group stages. It looks like Mikey Carey is the one who's a particular concern. So he has a leg injury at the moment, and they're awaiting a scan this week, which will mean that he has to be a major doubt. By the sounds of it, Adrian Mullen is back in Skell, so potentially he's a huge boost, but it could be a case of being without Carey and Donnelly and getting Mullen back in. So I don't know if that's a fair trade here.
I suppose the way John Donnelly has been playing and what he's offered, you know, would be on a par with Adrian Mullen. That's red. Like, if you score 7 points from playing a championship game in Parnell Park, you couldn't ask Adrian Mullen to do much more than that now, to be fair. So Donnelly's been playing really, really effective, and he's match sharp. Adrian is not. It's that simple. And like, he'd be a big loss. Like, he's such a big loss now at the minute from rewatching the Dublin game. And again, speaking to one of the Dublin selectors about this, Basically, the question I asked him was, how did you allow John Donnelly to score 7 points in play? Not to be dismissive or ignorant towards him, but he said his setup was excellent. So he said he'd start in the 10 position. He'd then run in behind kind of the two midfielders and then end up on the 12 position. So he was extremely hard to track. So if this is on dead balls now, mind you. So he was doing like these arcing runs back and forth, side to side of the pitch. And so it provides kind of a defensive headache for lads. Do I follow him? Do I stay? Is he going to midfield? Where is he going? And he happened to find himself in these pockets shooting. So he got 2 points in that game that were in close quarters. But other 5 points he got, if you'll see, they weren't in the same area of the pitch. He was popped out a pass and he shoots. You know, so how to track him? Obviously, you'd think naturally who would take him would be Chris Crummy and try get John Donnelly going back the way a bit too, because Chris Crummy, as we know, is going forward a good bit. He got 3 points since Galway the last day. And again, well, full value. So when he goes forward, he takes mind in too. And like, it goes into the same thing you're saying, Podge, about the man-to-man. So like, if you know you've got a high advancing wing back, a Chris Crummy or Kyle Hayes type person, geez, we have to mark him as well. Imagine you have to mark the backs. Like, so I think that just provides a headache. So if you put him on John Donnelly, you know, that'd be an interesting matchup. But I think from what he's offering Kilkenny at the moment, Donnelly, this is... he's too good not to play. Like, I would have always had good time for him, because he was always coming across as kind of a workman first and then a scorer second. But he seems to have kind of transferred that a bit into a big scoring threat this year, along with the workman. He hasn't dropped off that by any means. But I think he's critical to Kilkenny's motion. Like, he's passed out again for me. Owen Cody is Kilkenny's premier forward. John Donnelly at the moment, right now, is their second best forward. So he's offering the second most, you could say. That's including TJ, no disrespect, but that's how high I hold him in regard. So, but if Adrian's fit, like, I think you probably see him, I'd imagine, thinking about the time he's out, I'd imagine you would see him being introduced kind of within the game as a sub as opposed to starting. I just find it hard to see how he would start. But again, like, it's, I back to your point, Podge, about the matchups, like, it feels like that Kilkenny have adopted this. They've come away from the traditional style and they've adopted it under Derek Ling really, really well over the past couple of years, you know, how to do this running game. And it seems like they're getting better at it. Truthfully, now, out of the full package yet, time will tell, but I think it's a really good matchup for both teams.
Mm. Do they have a bit more about them now, Podge, rather than say what we would have seen under Cody a couple of years ago? Because naturally, Derek Ling wants to go in his own direction, but we were saying last year he was kind of moulding what he had previously, and like, there was a lot of the same personnel, and he's trying to feed in some of these younger players as well. Like, are they a different prospect to play against now than say what they would have been 2 seasons ago?
Yeah, I think they are, because they're playing a different system. But I also think availability is one of the key things here. Like, they've got a top two goalie in the country, Owen Murphy. And he's such a great starting point. You just have so much faith in him. Like, you're never, like, I don't want to put a jinx in him or anything like that, and Dublin fans wouldn't mind, but you're never in doubt when a ball's dropping into the square of what's the situation when Owen Murphy's there. So that gives you kind of a great starting point. And then in full back line, you've Hugh Lawler, who's arguably the best full back in the country. Just very consistent, very strong in the air, very steady. Is Mikey Butler available? I assume he is. Is he? Mm-hmm. He's perfect now again. So, like, he's back in action. Like, he's an excellent like man back cornerback, and well able to play ball. They just, like, when you start going through their team and you go through the lines, they're very when they've everyone available, they're as good as what's out there. But availability, I feel like, is the key for them. I feel like when they lose key players, I know the subs they have coming in are strong, but it's nearly like this system changes, or it doesn't seem to go as smoothly. Like, but when they, I do like Mass, like I want to see Massey Keown inside with Owen Cody. Like, they're two lads that I just think work so well together, so dangerous. Like, I was surprised, let's say, when he wasn't starting against Clare in that league final. And then when he came in, he picked off his 3 or 4 points, and you can see Massey, let's say, when he gets the ball, the cornerback is like, he's nearly like Shane O'Donnell maybe 7 years ago. It's like, I have to drop a yard here. I can't engage him, because if I engage him, he'll go around me or he'll brush me off, and then it's goal. So he has that threat, and now he's well able to take a point. So I just think that Kilkenny, when they have everyone available, they're so strong. Like, if you have a half forward line of Adrian Mullen, John Donnelly and TJ, it's a fairly formidable forward group. Yeah, it's not bad. And even from a point of view of Dublin carrying the ball out, like that's kind of what I was thinking during the week. When you're thinking about the Leinster final, you're thinking of like Dublin sending players up through the lines carrying the ball. Like if you're coming up against a wall of that half forward line dropping back into midfield tackling, like you've got some big aggressive tacklers in that group, and when they turn you over, then you're open, and that's probably what Dublin have to be careful of.
Are you both going for Kilkenny to win then? Scale you first.
Oh, yeah, I'm giving huge credit to Dublin for what they've done. Because again, I've no bones about bitterness, but I didn't have them coming out of the group this year. And I think that what they've done is probably exceeds expectation. Because you asked me at the start of the year, well, what would be a good year for Dublin? I thought if they got out of Leinster in a preliminary quarterfinal space, that would be a success. Mm-hmm. But for them to get to Leinster final, I think they probably, now they won't admit this, but probably they exceeded their expectation to a degree. But I still don't think they have enough for Kilkenny. Like you'd say, right, is there a surprise at store? I'd find it hard to believe there would be a surprise. Like again, Kilkenny now are four, they've played Dublin, they've seen them, felt them, whatever you want to call it, their forewarns, their system, etc. So I think that they've enough natural hurlers and ability at this stage who've, you know, just at a higher level of progression in my opinion than Dublin. So I'd be going for a Kilkenny victory, probably in the region of 3 or 4 points for me.
What about you, Podge?
Yeah, I do think it'll be very tight. Dublin, again, excellent goalie, Brennan's super, and like I've heard about it, the way he trains, like he's supposed to be just an animal to train. He puts in like a massive amount of effort. So when you've got someone like in goals, I think that's a great starting point. That's just so consistent and steady. And I don't know if like, this kind of first time in recent memory where they've had like O'Donnell at fullback, Crummy at wing back, Sutcliffe and Donald Burke, just they've had the four of them, and they're such marquee names in hurling, like for considering a team that maybe haven't won a Leinster or haven't contested in All-Ireland, but they're to have the four of them nearly in each line of your field is very impressive. So I give Dublin every chance, like, and I'd say it'll be similar to last year's Leinster final. It'll come down to a score or two, but I'd edge Kilkenny. Just like, even though like you talk about frees, Donald Burke's not going to miss frees, TJ's not going to miss frees. It's just they're so consistent. That's not going to separate them. In the turnover battle, puck out battle, it's going to be very similar. It's just going to be probably shooting efficiency is what's going to separate this one, and it'd probably give Kilkenny the slight edge there with their forwards. If Mullen's playing, Donnelly, TJ, Massey, Cody, that's the way I'd swing it, Jack. I'd say Kilkenny by 2 points.
I promise we'll talk about the McDonagh bit in the members pod. We're going to do our team of the league. We had one sent in by a listener, and we'll talk a bit more about the 20s in detail on that one. But I did want to touch on the 20s. Indulge me here, lads. I know both of you watched it. I was in the terrace on Saturday, so I haven't had a proper chance even to go back and rewatch it. So I'm living on vibes as much as information on this one. But what a win for the Offaly 20s. As Charlotte Byrne said afterwards, you learn lesson at 17 so you can give out lessons when you're under 20. And the heartbreak that they had with Paddy McCormack's goal back in 2022 in the minor final, this is an Offaly team who've rebuilt, Podge, and came back into a final at the weekend. Adam Screeny scores 12 points, only the one from play, but what a score from play it was, the one in the first half. Mm-hmm. The Crazy Frog gets one of the goals, and the other goal is scored by the captain, Dan Burke, who rips through the middle. And it's one of those which, weirdly, despite Offaly disappearing out of the game a little bit scoring-wise early in the second half, I actually thought it was a pretty dominant performance over the course of 60 minutes in that win against Tipperary. So tell me I'm horribly wrong in my assessment of this here.
Okay, so I think Skell touched on it earlier when he talked about Offaly probably had more time to take their shots. Like Offaly defenders were able to get more men to the ball, and Tipperary were taking shots, so they were under a bit more pressure. And there was a telling stat that came up on TG Carr in about the 54th, 55th minute. And it was, I think Offaly have taken 19 of 27 scoring chances. Tipperary have taken 14 of 27 scoring chances. And it was something like that. And the difference, from what I could tell, without analysing the game overly, was that Offaly were able to find an extra man shooting, going towards the goals, or under less pressure than Tipperary could. Like you can see the Tipperary puck outcomes, the three Offaly half forwards are getting back. They're working extremely hard. Even when Tip win it, they have to work so hard to get a score. And then when Offaly do turn it over, they're just using the ball so well. They're moving it through the lines. And then they're getting it to a position where they can pick out one of the lads in the full forward line, where it doesn't matter that Tip have an extra man back there because they have time in the ball. They've after creating that extra man. And like they were both, I'd say, really well-coached teams in the sense of like the use of the, they were trying to use the ball. They were trying to like pick out their corner forwards when they got the opportunity to take scores the opportunity. I'd say maybe if Tip were reflecting on the game in all honesty, I'd say they'd be very disappointed with the freeze they gave away. I think some of the frees that they gave away like would frustrate you as a fan or as a player or as a management. I don't think Offaly gave away the same frees. I think Offaly were more disciplined in the tackle. And even though there might have been a similar enough free count, I don't know what the free count was, but even you look at McCarthy coming out hitting the frees, they're from past his own 65 on the sidelines. They're tough frees to hit, and when you're coming out all the way and you're kind of chasing the game, it's not too taxing an Offaly. But I was very like there's a few players you could mention, but just to mention like obviously Offaly's use of the ball is very impressive. With their setup, I was very impressed with it. They did it so seamlessly. They changed in the middle of the game as well, where they were pushing kind of three up inside, pushed on the tip backs for the puck outs, and then they dropped one out. And like I thought, they were just a very well organized team, very smart hurlers, excellent use of the ball. I was wildly impressed with him. Dan Burke, I know he got in the match. I know he's the captain, and he just seems like a great fella. But everything he did just impressed me wildly. Everything, just I'd say I nearly like to review the warm up. He probably did something there that impressed me as well. But the way he picked up the ball running at full speed with one hand, nearly looking up, just the comfort, how comfortable he is in the ball. The man must put savage hours into hurling. He just looks excellent. Even the speech at the end, I found it funny. He complimented Tipperary, and like they've had a few ding dong battles, and he obviously had massive respect for him. And he handed back the mic, and someone said to him, "Three cheers for Tipperary," and he was just like, "No." He was kind of like, "No, it's grand." But then they kind of said it to me, and he had to. So I was like, that three cheers thing, I'd be happy to do away with as well. Like it's nearly patronage. So I liked that about him. I liked everything about Dan Burke's performance at the weekend. But he was excellent. But yeah, that's my summation anyway of Offaly. And listen, it was excellent, and well, no more so. I'd say you enjoyed it massively. But it was great for her.
I surely did. I think it was Charlotte Burns who was kind of going, give him the three hip hips, because I think this is what's meant to happen in speech. But I'm with you. I think there's nothing worse than when you're standing on the pitch and someone is doing the hip hip array. It almost feels condescending. I can feel Scale shaking his head across the way already. Your assessment of it, Scale, because obviously you were very familiar with these two teams, and we talked about it a good bit last week, and how things played out in the pitch.
I think probably just on Podge's point about the freeze, like Offaly players, one, when they have the ball, they drew the freeze. That's it. They ran at such pace, at such difficulty for Tipperary, that there was sometimes options for no other option but to foul. I think for me, Offaly won their freeze, if that makes sense. You know, Tip, I know it's Tip gave them away, but Offaly actually won them by the way in which they're playing. And one thing we noticed from Gore's perspective when we assessed Offaly was their close contact ball skill, you know, on defence is brilliant. So they're not the biggest team physically. You know, they're not made of muscle everywhere. They haven't gone down that road where we're going to pack on weight on these young lads and try to run through you. They've kept it in their, I would class it as their natural size, conditioned them as best possible, but coached them really well on how to dispossess teams in close contact with the ball. Offaly are brilliant at that. And there was numerous times, once you become aware of it, you think while you're watching the game and going, there's one, there's another one. They keep at these close tackles. And they don't need to suppose, give away those frees. And like you were mentioning there, Podge, about where McCarthy was coming out for it. And those frees, I'm not saying they're structured, but they're given away in areas that are technically safe. So they're not too dangerous for me. So you can give, if you're going from the inline up to the opposition 45 or 50, I'm happy enough with that. If you have to give away a free there, that's okay. When you get into screening territory, like he did, you know, a good bit, then that's a different kettle of fish entirely. So for me, Offaly won their frees. And then Tipperary, I'd say, you know, they were given frees in a position that weren't dangerous. But Offaly's pace is something that's extremely impressive. And me personally, as a hurling person first, I would like to see them keep going down that road and utilise their pace. Not what happens sometimes now, teams, is you get young lads to 18, 19 and say, right, we need to build you up now and get you strong for the trials and tribulations of senior hurling, etc. But like it should be awful to see Adam Screeny, me personally, or Dan Bourke, you know, packed on weight, and then we lose that bit of elusiveness, that bit of flair, that bit of penetrative running. You know, that's what I think the people of Ireland have nearly become encapsulated by Screeny and how elusive he is, and he's shooting from ridiculous angles and they're going over. Do you know what I mean? And that's the kind of the youthful exuberance that we love to see as hurling people. And like, I know, because I was part of the Galway management and Offaly, let's say, won the championship we were partaking in. I'm still not disgruntled because I'm happy as a hurling man to see Offaly come up. Like, we're always on about hurling, and we wanted to grow, we wanted to get better, we wanted to go expand in different counties. But now we have what I would call as a classified powerhouse in hurling terms, slowly creeping back up again. And it's fine. Under 20, it's great. But it needs to transfer to senior within the next couple of years. That's a critical point. And my only concern is that these guys get thrust in too early. You know, that they get put into the 5 or 6 or 7, or more of them even get put into the Offaly senior team trying to carry the fight, which I would feel at the moment they're not quite ready for. And that's no disrespect to anybody. But if they're progressed at a natural time, they'll be ready in time. But if they're pushed in too early, I'd be slightly concerned. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And again, think about this.
Six will be involved in the John McDonagh Cup final this coming weekend. And
yeah.
I think they've kind of been dipped in slowly but surely with the senior team all year. And in a way, the McDonagh Cup probably wasn't a bad thing. I don't think you could have put half a dozen of them into a Leinster Championship. Even Division 1 this year, Johnny Kelly was watching the game time with them. And that was with the 20s Championship in mind. But also, I think, just the development of these players. And Dan Burke has got a lot more game time than Adam Screeny has, for example.
Put it this way, right? So let's say you win the Drummond Tournament at the weekend, right? And you progress into the Leinster Championship. And then Johnny Kelly is manager, and he's looking at the team this year, the Untrinity team, and he goes, right, I need to use 10 of those lads. And then you're partaking in the Untrinity Championship next year, which probably, is it 10 or 11 of them underage next year?
To be honest, that's one of the biggest problems next year.
So now what do you do?
If they get to the Leinster Championship, there's 11 lads who are underage from the starting team at the weekend. Yeah. The two midfielders drop out, but aside from that, they pretty much have players all across the team who are still going to be underage. It's essentially the minor team from 2 years ago that are a year ahead of time, if you want to put it that way.
So what I'm trying to get at here, Will, is what happens...
I don't know how you balance it.
Johnny Kelly uses... I'm just going to pick a figure of pie in the sky. Eight of those lads. Just per se, eight of those lads. And what happens if Offaly don't come through Leinster next year in the Under-20 Championship? Would that be seen as a huge failure? Or because they're transferred to senior, is it a win? Is it a plus?
I don't know. This is
the balance in action. Like, you take your time with these lads, as far as I'm concerned. But
yeah, I think you need to give lads a chance to win at the grade that they're at. And this should be a great opportunity for them to go and try and retain both titles next season because of the core group of players they have, and because most of their main players are still underage for next season.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, it has to be about development on the other end. And I think it is important to try and win and carry this wave of momentum. And also, I can't understand... In some ways, the support that's behind this team, in a way I can. Like, obviously, they have captured the imagination. But there's part of me thinking, like, one in four people in the county were in Nolan Park on Saturday night. About one in six in the county were in O'Connor Park on Sunday afternoon. Like, there's 5,000 or 6,000 people there for the homecoming, which is just absolutely crazy at 12 o'clock in the day on a bank holiday Sunday when people have a million other things to do. So I just think they have to try and push on at 20s as much as they possibly can. As important as it is to have that, you know, I guess best possible position to be in 1B for next year, and they want to be in the Leinster Championship. I think if it comes to the balancing act of next season, they have to edge towards 20s. And you don't want what happened this year where Dan Ravenhill, one of the most important players in the 20s, rips his hamstring against Leash and ended up playing about 3 minutes of hurling after that in the final at the weekend. And don't get me wrong, it was lovely that he got to come on, but Dan Ravenhill would have been a really important player for the team if, say, he'd been kept in cotton wool and not playing as much for the seniors, or maybe rushed back in for the first game against Leash.
Well, I put it this way, Podge, you won the Ireland 2013, right? You won 3 under-21s in a row. Is that right, in Munsters? Did you win Ireland as well? 3 Ireland?
We won 2012, 2013, 2014.
In under-21?
Yeah.
So the question is, so you won in 12, right? And the last time you'd won Ireland before that was 96. Seven at senior, so there was it was 15, 16 years. So there was a bit of pressure, you could say, on the people within the county. How many lads played the final? Not putting on the spot now, mind you, the 2013 final. They're under 21.
You literally are putting them on the spot there. No, can you remember how many lads?
That's fine. I can try to fly through it. Like Dave McInerney, Colm Gallivan, Tony Kelly, myself, Shane O'Ronnell, Conor Ryan was under 21 in 2012. Pat O'Connor was under 21 in 2012. Conor McGrath was under 21 in 2012. Did I say Conor Ryan? No.
Yeah. Was Pat Kelly?
Pat Kelly, no. He's older.
That's eight.
I think I've got everyone there.
So if I was to take the under 21 team in 12, you're saying eight of those guys transferred onto the senior in 13?
Yeah.
At 22, though? No. 21 and 22.
Yeah, but yeah, like we obviously don't know that the change in age group as well. And yeah. I know that, I think of that 2012 team, I'd say 14 players were called up straight away. So when Davey called in, there was 14 of the 21s panel called in.
But it was so different, like, though. Because Galway won the 21 and 11, and Cunningham brought in 17 on 21s for the 12 season. And you can't put too much. There was a difference back then. It's hard to explain this now. The difference back then was you were a year, if not two, older than the current crop. You know,
yeah,
you were really in a man territory back then. Whereas now there's still the feeling that they're still boys there to a degree. I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but that's the way the under 20 grade and the minor grades feels. They're a bit youthful at the moment. And
I'd agree with you, Skell. If you look at games from 10 years ago, it's a very different physical contest to what you see at under 20 now, because there's a lot of lads who are 18, 19 playing now by comparison to lads who were 21, and many of them already seasoned, say, senior panellists for a couple of years before they were playing an under 21 final. It's kind of chalk and cheese, really.
Well, the physicality for me in terms of close contact has increased tenfold in the last 10 years. I think if you go back to the mid-2000s or even up to the start of the 10s, it was really hurling first. Like, you used to get away with, if you're a really good hurler, like, you'd win an awful lot of your battles, whereas now it feels like you obviously have to be a really good hurler. You have to be extremely fit and extremely strong, because the amount of close contact and tackles and the time you have on the ball is... There's a stupid stat out there at the minute that if you get possession in today's game, you've less than a second and a half before you reach contact, which I fully believe. And so that time itself, even if that time went to 2 or 3 seconds, that's the difference between getting away 5 yards from ledge and getting bottled. The swamp tackle, as you said, Mark, as Podge. You know, so I just, again, might summarise, not to go on a big kind of discussion think tank here, right, is that I wouldn't like to see the Offaly lads thrust into the senior team next year, you know, 10 of them, to try and carry the fight for Offaly if they just take another year, which is easy for me to say. And then, you know, you might get more benefit or fruition out of that group going forward.
Yeah. Oh, no, look, Offaly aren't quite back. I did joke about that the weekend with the Michael Jordan quote, where it was like, Offaly hurling, we're back. I don't for a moment think... It's very different even to Podge's team, where you're competing at All-Ireland level as opposed to competing, in this case, trying to get back up to a point of closing the gap to other teams in Leinster. It's totally different. But look, we shall see how things go. Gentlemen, we'll do a team of the league on the members pod. Podge, thanks a million.
Yeah, thanks a million for having me.
James Gale, thank you, sir.
See you, folks. Right.
And the Hurling Pod is brought to you by Borgosh Energy. They're the proud sponsors of the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship.
OTB's The Hurling Pod.
With Borgosh Energy.
Proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.